This week, I talk living in haunted houses, featuring multiple experiences and how to know when to clear it or just get out. The following experience was shared by author Erica Wright on crimereads.com. Her books are available on Amazon. I will post a link on the Ghost Guy Daniel Facebook page soon. My childhood home in rural Tennessee was built in the late 1800s and was run down when we moved in. Mice in the cupboards, squirrels in the attic, and even once a rat snake draped casually across a doorframe. To be fair, I don't remember the place looking like a house of horrors. I was too young, and by the time I really started forming memories, my parents had made it lovely. But odd, unexplainable phenomenon never went away. I remember voices one afternoon, high-pitched, coming from our downstairs hallway. Not words, more like giggles and shrieks. They suggested children playing some sort of game, hide and seek maybe, or simply tag. I was in my bedroom around 9 or 10 years old, and at first I froze. I called out to them, but when I received no response, I crept towards the banister and peered over the edge. Empty. Completely empty. A few decades had passed, yet I can still remember the chill I felt as I realized I was alone. Intrepid, or foolhardy, I went exploring, but no matter how many closets I opened, or curtains I peeked behind, I couldn't find the source of the noises. My mother talks about the time she heard boots in the foyer. My great-aunt Polly once heard glass shattering in the middle of the night, and my grandfather recalled someone, or something, placing an icy hand on his shoulder while he helped us with plumbing work one hot summer day. Several members of my family have ghost stories about our house. I also remember that our heavy antique doorbell would ring on occasion without anybody on the other side. You'd think these memories meant I spent my formative years in a state of abject terror, but that wasn't the case. In fact, I rather liked the mysteries and made up my own stories about unseen faces. I liked the wonder of unexplained music suddenly heard in the middle of an otherwise unremarkable day. When I think back to these parts of my life, it almost seems inevitable that I would become a writer. My childhood was training for a creative life, its own sort of master class in flights of fancy. The traits I developed then have served me well, not only as I start to imagine my next novel. I often think of my strange young experiences as the root, at least in part, of my writing. I've realized they also taught me to be comfortable with the unexpected, to not fear what I don't understand or even what seems beyond my abilities, what seems impossible. So far, there haven't been any murmurs from the hallways of my current home. The only noise in the night we hear is our off-balance dryer and the cry of a real baby next door. And if we get a few strange noises, I'm prepared. There's something thrilling about the uncharted, about things existing in the world beyond our current level of understanding. Whether or not ghosts are real, their stories give us inspiration, as a way to live more alert to possibilities. It's a very interesting experience from Erica Wright. And when I found the story, I knew I had to share it, because I actually... knew this, but I didn't fully think about it at the time. The idea that if you are raised in a haunted house, you'll see the world kind of on different terms. I never really thought of the heaviness of that experience, because for something that most people in this world fear, if you face those fears, you know, you're braver towards it. It doesn't affect you in the same light. Now, for this woman, it is the extreme case. I mean, she went on to write horror novels and ghost stories So having these experiences as a child kind of set her up for her future. I didn't really have the same type of experiences when I was young. I do have strange stories to tell, but it's not the reason I'm doing what I'm doing today. That came more later in life. But I can understand the idea, because when I first started out in this business, I was freaked out by it. You know, going into haunted places, now I've desensitized myself to it. So when I go into haunted places, I don't feel the same fear. But she was given that opportunity as a child to get over it, and in she saw it in the right way. So I'd say to anybody, if your children are experiencing these types of ghostly occurrences, as long as it's not something restless or dangerous, which I'll kind of get into it in a little bit, just let it happen. Let them get used to it. For the most part, you know, I've heard of these stories with children experiencing ghosts. For the most part, until you tell them to be scared, they really don't know to be scared. They just kind of accept it as a part of life. And I think there's a beauty to that. Now, I posted some stuff on the Facebook page. This is from the Ghost Walks Facebook and from the Ghost Walks Instagram. If you want to visit those, it's just slash the Ghost Walks. That's the address. The first one is an experience from someone named Bex. She says, I grew up in a haunted house. There's one spot in my mom's basement where if you cross it, you feel the energy change. I was so afraid when I was a kid that I used to try and take my dog on a leash down there and he would pull the opposite way. And there's a shower room in the basement as well. I was having a shower once and the curtain opened halfway by itself while I was turned away from it. Now, I asked her about if she knew what it was that was haunting the basement. Sometimes people have history. And her response was, my mom told me she got the house blessed after some weird things started happening. Never told me what happened because she didn't want to scare me when I was younger. So there might be a follow-up to this. I hope so. But looking at that experience, I would not say it could be residual. Although I think the experience in the shower almost shows that there's a bit of consciousness there. The fact that it reacted in a way. I mean, it could be that if the shower was there before you moved in, it could also be residual in the sense that, you know, somebody's going to take a shower. I mean, it could go either way in this situation. But to have one space in the basement that's almost like a barrier when you cross it, almost tells me that something about that space is important. So I don't know if you still have access to this house, but if you do, if your parents still live there, to go back and kind of go down to that basement space where the energy wall existed and just see if you can find anything, kind of like a detective. Because if not physically there, like something written on a wall or something dropped or left behind, which I'm sure is long gone, then in the history of the house, there might be some connection to that basement space. But hopefully, Bex, if you're listening to the show, if you do get an update on what might have been down there, I'd be very interested in hearing it, as well as the listeners, I'm sure. The second experience was posted on Instagram by the username WarriorWithin7. I lived on Ford Street in Hamilton years ago. I would hear hands slapping on the wall that divided the bedroom and living room, also on my closet door. One morning, when I used to work for Tim Hortons, early in the mornings, I had a tea in a traveler's mug. I was on MSN at the time talking to my friend from Scotland. As I went to grab my tea for a sip, it raised in the air about a foot or so, off the computer desk, and then went back down. I was terrified and left for work early. I mean, the thing that pops out to me the most with that experience is that anybody who is scared enough to leave for work early, you know that this is a real experience, because most of the time you're just trying to drag those moments out as much as you possible before you have to go to work. Although I'm sure Tim Hortons is a wonderful place to work. I do enjoy visiting it on a regular occasion. But you mentioned a foot or so. That is something. I think I mentioned it recently. If not, I'll just quickly summarize. There was an experience, the ghost author Terry Boyle. It's on the website. Just look up Terry Boyle on ghostwalks.com. He was at the Inn at the Falls in Bracebridge, and this was the one and only time he actually saw something move. And his experience was similar, where it was an ashtray that came off of a table and floated across him and landed on another table. And it wasn't just him, it was also the cook in the kitchen was watching this occur. So to say to have something float up and float back down, this is the kind of stuff that happens off camera, for lack of a better term. So if you have a ghostly experience in your house and something is moved, usually you won't see it. But you know it's happened, right? It's not like this material item just disappeared into nothing and reappeared in a new spot. That's not what's happening here. It would have had to have moved. So for that reason, I'm just saying we don't normally see these things moving. We just see the final stage of it being moved. But if you're in the right place at the right time, such as with your traveler's mug or with Terry Boyle in the ashtray, then you're actually seeing it occur. Now, I just wanted to talk about one final thing before I jump into the ghost story that's been advertised here, is the difference between having a ghost or spirit in your home and having restless energy in your home. Because the one side is acceptable. Having a spirit in your home who is good energy or decent energy and is just kind of living with you is fine, and it won't affect your life in any negative way. But having more restless spirit, more restless energy, is not good. So to explain, and I've talked about it before on the idea of negative energy, if you have a negative restless energy inside your home and you don't know about it, this is very detrimental to your family. You could be feeling anger, your children could be feeling anger, even your pets can be feeling anger and acting strange, and you'll be questioning their health or questioning even their mental health and not realizing that there could be an energy there. Now, this doesn't explain everything. Disclaimer. This can explain certain situations where you're going to a house that you knew was haunted, or a house where you've had these vivid experiences to know for sure that it's haunted. Or if you, like me, did an investigation and brought something home with you. If there's other explanations for why these energies and emotions are occurring, then it is something that you could look into. Now, if the energy is not restless and just fine and kind and easy, then there's nothing wrong. I've heard so many stories over the years, like just normal people, regular folks who talk about the ghost in their house like it's a member of the family. And that's wonderful. And I think if you have an energy in your house that just kind of exists, just leave it be. And for the most part, if you are scared of it, it will keep to itself because it doesn't want to frighten you. It will still exist because that's its home, but it'll just keep to itself. Now that's the good stuff. That's the nice side of the story. But what happens if it's restless? Now that's the not so nice side. Now I say the term restless and you might be thinking, okay, what the heck does that mean? Well, there's three main areas here. Things are moving around constantly, as when causing you stress to find it, that could be restless. The other side of, I already mentioned, is negative energy. So the Bex, her experience, she said you walk through kind of a wall of energy in this space. My guess is this is negative, otherwise it wouldn't have stuck in her head as much. But negative energy could also be hopelessness and dread and anger in certain spots throughout a home that just kind of gets stuck there. And the worst of it all, what they call the poltergeist experience, is getting hit or scratched. And the worst of that is being pushed on stairs. Now, for the most part, you hear ghost stories and really spirits can't hurt you. I know you'll have your odd experience that's very extreme. Sometimes I get this people when they're talking about the Ouija board, if it sounds like a horror movie script, and they say, oh, they were possessed and people were murdered and stuff like that. For the most part, none of that has been fully proven, that it was caused by spirits and not just other factors. But it can't get to that extreme, but it can get to an extreme in the sense of physically reaching out. So I called it poltergeist. People have been hit. They've been scratched. Not so much that they've been hit, that, you know, like a boxer smacked them in the face. But like, you know, they feel it and scratched, not like their skin is being ripped from their body, but more like you can see the marks, and it is a disturbing experience. I've never had that personally, but I've talked to people who I know have, and it is disturbing to have it occur. And that final one that I mentioned, being pushed on the stairs, that's the worst of it. If a restless, angry, evil energy ever got to the point where it was trying to push you on stairs, you know it means you harm. Not that anything can happen from it. From what I hear, it's just like a light thud on the back. You might feel a pressure on you while you're going up or down the stairs. But you know it means you harm. It just doesn't have the ability to cause it. And in that case, this is a restless energy. In that case, you could have a psychic come in and clear it, or you can get out of the house. You may think, well, you know, why would I leave my home? It is always better to try and clear it first and not have to move every time something happens, especially if whatever this energy is attached to you. So for that reason, I always say start with a legitimate psychic first, and then, you know, go to those other extremes. Sometimes a psychic is enough to pass that energy. Now, the worst restless spirits can drive you out of your home. And for that, I do have an experience that happened to the Bilotti family in Hamilton. Once there was a house on Hamilton Mountain, located in the spot that eventually became the Police Association's parking lot. How bad can a house be to meet the wrecking ball? Once a home where families lived and played, to be wiped from this world, most completely forgotten, but not this house on Upper Wellington Street. This house had a haunted history. These are remembered as legends which make up the character of a city. Hamilton being known for ghost stories means any house with a story to tell becomes famous, and sometimes infamous. The house on Hamilton Mountain made the list when the Bilotti family moved in. It's the 1970s and they've rented the small house. Moved into the space, happy to have a home, the experience didn't take long to start. Beginning calmly, the standard happenings in a haunted house, such as leaving rooms and clearly turning off the lights, a mental note made as not to waste hydro, and coming back to find the lights back on again. The family could shake this off as faulty switches or old wiring. Not so much with the footsteps, though. While sitting in the living room watching TV, the entire family enjoying the show until one of them looks up, "Did you hear that?" Muting the TV and listening to the clear footsteps of someone slowly walking the upstairs hallway. A delay before anyone is brave enough to go upstairs, every time finding it empty. These are the stories you'd hear from almost every haunted house. The next experience? Not so much. Norm Bilotti slept soundly beside his wife one Sunday night. He jumped awake as Sherry started screaming. Shaking off the confusion, he looked over to her. She was looking at the corner. It took a moment, his eyes adjusting to the darkness. The natural confusion of a ghostly experience mixed with his mind rolling through all the natural explanations for a dark figure to be standing in their bedroom. It was hovering, its feet at the level of the bed, a tall figure in what seemed like a dark flowing robe, looking down, a smooth faceless surface with no eyes, but Norm felt the thing's stare. Sherry screamed again, and the figure snapped out as the bedroom lights came on. Ask yourself this, what is enough to drive me from my home? This extreme haunting is rare, but not impossible. The escalation of the ghostly drove the Bellotti family from the Upper Wellington house. For most horror movies, this is where the credits would roll. But this story goes on, because the focus wasn't on the Bellottis, but the house itself. The owner tried to rent it again, no luck. Giving up, he put the house up for sale. People walked through it, real estate agents doing their darndest to get somebody, anyone, to buy. No luck. Maybe it was a lack of understanding that failed to sell the haunted house. Not realizing this place can't be sold as a cozy family space, they could have applied the ghost discount. Instead, they failed. The owner having no choice but give it up for a song, a parking lot planned, and the demolition crew sent in. A worker was tearing into the walls of the first level. Underneath the jarring sound of equipment, he heard voices. Stopping the machines, listening for whispers, which always came from the second floor. On different occurrences to a couple of workers, each of them running up the stairs, expecting to find some kids who'd snuck into the haunted house for fun, always finding the rooms and hallway empty. I wonder if calm settled among all those harassed by this house, when he finally tore into the wall of the master bedroom, finding the artifact behind it. A gravestone mysteriously disappeared from the Pioneer Young Family Cemetery about a kilometer south on Upper Wellington, belonging to two baby girls. Why the gravestone was stolen and how it ended up in the wall of this house remains a mystery. Those familiar with curses, with disturbing burial grounds, focusing the energy of the dead on a space, or even the practices of voodoo will not be mystified. Although many families are content on living with their ghosts, some instances of restless energy, like with the Bellottis, exist. This over-the-top negative energy is not what a cozy family home makes. And in the end, they did the right thing. To get out and let the house disappear into infamy where it belongs. That's all for this week, everyone. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do me a favor. Please share and tell your friends. I would be in your debt. All the best, and talk to you next week.